This is the Skirted Roundtable. I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings.
And this is Megan Arquette with Beach Bungalow 8.
And Joni Webb with Code to Texas.
And this week on the Skirted Roundtable, we are welcoming Christina Strutt, who is the owner, founder, and all-around design expert behind the beautiful British shop Cabbages and Roses. Just beautiful fabrics and lifestyle products. And they've also just released, Christina's just released a book, At Home with Country, which is the fifth in their series of books, which is really beautiful, and we're going to talk about that today. So, Christina, thank you so much for joining us at the Skirted Roundtable.
Thank you, Juan, and thank you for a lovely introduction.
So, Christina, as we do with all of our guests, we'd love to hear about your background, how, you know, your design background, your writing background, what launched the Cabbages and Roses. So please tell us.
Okay, well, my background, one of four daughters. I was born in London and brought up in London, but have always yearned to live in the country ever since I can remember. So I think that was the direction I started in. I was not good at school. I left with no qualifications. I was really bad, particularly in art classes and sewing classes.
Ironic.
For some reason, they imagined I was very clever, so they sent me in the direction of Latin and languages and sciences. But probably because my father was a doctor, my mother was a nurse, so they imagined that there was some sort of working brain in there, but there wasn't. So I left school at 16 without a clue of where I was going. So I ended up I worked in the chocolate department of Portman Macy, which was heaven. I then worked for my uncle, who was a jewellery designer, and somehow found my way into Vogue magazine. Heaven knows how this happened. But there I was, and that was the beginning of my working career. And I started as a secretary. It was an interesting start.
Mm-hmm. That's how a lot of people start.
I think it's a very good way to get into an interesting job. Start at the bottom, but not that being a secretary is anything wrong with it. But that's not what I really wanted to do. I then, after about 3 years, moved into the art department, which was great fun. Of course, I knew nothing about what I had to do. I think I lost a stone in the first 2 weeks. along with a lot of very important negatives, because in those days we didn't have digital photography.
And so you were at Vogue doing fashion layouts, or?
It was in the art department. I was kind of administrating it all and seeing, extraordinarily, I had the job of interviewing new photographers. So it was up to me, who knew nothing, as to whether a young photographer would get a job working on Vogue or not. Huh. But, it was fine. I obviously had an eye. Anyway, so after about 3 years in that department, I very luckily got the job of being assistant to the living editor. And that job was complete heaven, which involved going to people's beautiful houses with a bunch of flowers and directing a photographer. So it was heaven.
So you were styling?
Yeah.
Styling the photo shoots. And were you always interested in this particular, do you think it's just in your blood, this English cabbage and roses sort of aesthetic, or do you feel like it developed after seeing a lot of different styles?
I think a bit of both. I think, as a child, I longed to live in the country. I grew up in a suburb of London called Hampstead, and very close to our house was the Heath, which is a huge expanse of green wilderness, and it was beautiful. That's where I wanted to be. So I imagined the country gene was in there from the early days. And then, it added to that the layers and layers of beautiful houses and working with brilliant people, I think must have influenced my style. I think everything I do comes naturally. I'm more instinctive than anything else.
As an aside, what is a heath specifically?
I don't know how many acres it's a few hundred acres of parkland.
Okay, because I know it reminded me of the movie Notting Hill, where there's a film being shot on Hampstead Heath.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That was at Kenwood House.
Okay, yeah, I was They didn't show a lot of it in the movie, but it was very pretty.
Christina, you mentioned styling. You were in styling, and I've noticed that in America, our photo shoots are styled within an inch of their lives. I mean, it almost looks like no one even lives in the house. But in England, it seems like there isn't much styling that does go on. I mean, do you know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying. I think there's a huge difference between American and English styling. I think Americans are incredibly chic. I mean, just have to look at the way people dress in America. Everybody has got manicured nails and a proper blow dries in their hair. In England, I think people are much more casual about things. I certainly am very casual. The clothes we sell are always washed and never ironed. So I don't think I've ironed anything for the last 30 years. So it's completely different to the American styling, which I'm not saying one or other is better, but the Cabbages style is much more relaxed. And in fact, it reminds me of, our first photo shoot for Cabbages that I didn't do, but we had a proper photographer. One of the models came with a huge blister and plaster on her toe. And she was so concerned that she should take it off or hide it. And I said, no, it's real life. It's real life. You know, a Band-Aid is fine. So that's my opinion.
Well, I think that's actually a really interesting question, Joni, because I guess I would look at it like it's, to us, I think the English style, and when you see in the pictures, is it's so nice and casual and comfortable looking. And ours, even in similar style, you know, photo shoots of something that might be in the same aesthetic, almost seems so, it's like been worked on really hard to get it to look casual.
Yeah, but when you see the magazines, it's just striking. They'll, you know, like in a big, like British Home and Gardens or whatever, and they will almost like do no styling. Mm-hmm. And the things that they put in their magazines would never ever fly in the United States. I didn't realize. I know the English don't have manicures and pedicures like we do here and all that, you know. So I guess that is an extension of their lifestyle, maybe. Maybe it's just more honest than we are. I don't know.
It is an interesting difference. And I hope that the Americans don't think any less of us because of it.
I think the opposite.
Yeah, I think it's something that Americans strive for, but we, just by the nature of being American, we're constantly going. You know, we don't take the time to relax and, right, you know, enjoy a rumpled cotton that's been, you know, sun-dried and that sort of thing.
Well, I think a great example of that is the movie The Holiday, where in the blog posts I've done and other people have done, I think the English country cottage was way more popular than the California chic home, which was gorgeous, architecturally stunning, but it seemed like people were way more interested in the country cottage, which had that real comfortable, lived-in look.
Well, wait till Cabbages comes to America. We'll teach you how to do it.
When are y'all coming? I'm dying for your fabrics.
Well, I can't wait to open up a shop in Sag Harbor. I've even seen the right premises for us. I'd be very happy to come over and live there and run the shop. I just adore America. Just give us some time. We've got a wonderful lady, Susie Dominic, is working on getting us to America.
Oh, that would be great.
Can we order your fabrics on a website?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Again, we're slightly different to everybody else. And this isn't intentional. It's just the way we are. We have a website. You can order. You can place your order on the website, but one of our shops will ring you to discuss your order. So there's always a person involved. It's never just machines talking to each other and then you get a parcel. You will always talk to one of our really lovely shop girls who will talk you through your whole order, and your parcel will arrive beautifully wrapped.
When I do think of this particular aesthetic in America, I do in my head, I go toward, you know, seaside towns of like Sag Harbor and the Hamptons and that sort of thing. I feel like it fits perfectly. Is it Mary Carter, you all, who, Mary Randolph Carter has a great book that she put out called American Family Style. and her home is on the East Coast. It's a family home, and it's, you know, the salt box, weathered gray outside, and the inside is filled with this sort of casual family living with really yummy cottons and gathered, you know, things that are loved, groupings of things that are loved, that are found, like maybe a group of shells, bleached out shells have been gathered over the years. And I notice a lot of that in your book, that that your photographs are filled with exactly that, you know, maybe artwork that was done on a summer vacation that's propped up in front of some beautiful, you know, piece that's been handed down through the family. And I love that sort of mix of provenance.
Yeah, exactly. And all those things have a history and a meaning. And it's so much more beautiful to have collected your shells than to have gone to an expensive shop where you spend a fortune on something that, you know, just doesn't have the same depth or meaning or character.
So tell us how you got from working at Vogue and doing the styling for the living section.
So from there, I mean, the only reason to leave such a delicious job would be to get married, and that's what happened to me. I married my husband, Mark, who has lived in Bath, well, most of his life. He's always come back to Bath. And to leave London and to come to this divine house in the middle of the countryside, everybody said I'd be crazy within a year. That was 30 years ago, and I haven't looked back. And I've never been more busy than I have in these last 30 years. So that's why I left Vogue. And once the children had grown up enough, they were 5 and 6, they went off to school, so I could start working again. And I carried on styling for freelance from various magazines, including Victoria in America, which was heaven. It was best paid, much better paid than English magazines, and really heavenly to work for. They were wonderful. They appreciated everything I did. Styling continued, then I kept being asked to decorate houses by friends, by acquaintances. So this became another business that I was doing. And so I set up a company, which was very hard to set up as an interior decorator, because you needed in order to get the fabrics for the clients, you needed to set up accounts all over the place. And to set up an account, you needed to spend a huge amount of money. But this is something that we've made sure with Cabbages, that it's easy for the trade to buy through us, rather than making jump through hoops like I used to have to. So from the interior decorating, which after about 15 years, I thought, this is not what I want to be doing. It became too time consuming and less creative when, you know, one is measuring fridges to so they'd fit into somebody's brand new kitchen or buying the bed linen. It just became a job rather than a creative experience. So that was the moment I decided with a great friend to set up Cabbages and Roses.
Are your patterns for your fabric based on something, or are they completely original? Are they, you know, did you find scraps of vintage wallpaper or fabrics?
Exactly that, little scraps. So our first fabric beads was a fragment of fabric that belonged to my partner's aunt. And it was exquisitely beautiful, and there really was nothing that you could buy apart from trawling the antique markets to find a bigger piece. There was nowhere that did the faded, beautiful, old, gentle patterns. We investigated and did a lot of research, and eventually we found a wonderful printer in London called Louise Hatley, who helped us. We worked on how to get a fabric already faded to make it look as if it was faded, so it was strong in some places and wearing away in other places. So this is how we started, and from that one fabric, we kind of launched the whole thing, and everything went crazy very soon.
What year was that?
That was in 2000, at the end of 2000. And from creating this one fabric, we made cushions, skirts, we dressed
clothing. Yeah, yes. Clothing as well.
Beginning, yeah.
it's interesting because, you know, Laura Ashley, unfortunately, when she was, when in the beginning, she had such a great idea, and really at the time, a really novel idea, and she and her family were living on a riverside in a tent. And it's unfortunate after her death that, you know, her, I'm not sure who, you know, it's said that her husband sort of went over, made it so big that it became so commercialized that that original intent was lost of the clothing that was, you know, simple and made from beautiful cottons and feminine and that sort of thing got lost. So yeah. It feels as though you may have picked up in the correct way where that left off.
I did, and it was the timing, I don't know, I can't remember when she died, but I do remember working at Laura Ashley. And I was doing, I think I was doing some styling or something, but what happened was the merchandisers and the business people of the company kind of took over from the aesthetics. And I think that's where companies go wrong, where money becomes more important than what you're designing and what you're selling, or indeed the brand. And that's probably because I'm not a very particularly good businesswoman. To me, the most important thing is to produce things that are beautiful and different, and that, that people continue to want, and that, that's also important, just to listen to the customer.
It feels like now is the time to bring back this sort of English country aesthetic, this romantic cottage feel. I feel like it's been out of the loop for a while, maybe because, you know, like you were saying, efforts like the Laura Ashley Company sort of went so many different directions instead of sticking with what they did best. And, you know, we just with, I feel that we've had sort of a lull in it, and it's nice to see it coming back.
Yes, I think everything, almost all fashions come back eventually. Mm-hmm. But I think what tends to happen is things come back, then everybody does it, it gets so overdone that people then can't bear to look at that particular style. So it gets put to bed for 10 years and then it resurrects itself again. But I think this is why we wanted to do this new book, because we did become associated with the English country cottage style. So this is why I wanted to do this book, At Home with Country, to show that cabbages could fit into almost any situation, so not just the pretty little country cottage, mm-hmm. but, you know, as you saw, everything from lovely houses in Cape Cod and Long Island to city apartments in New York, just to show the versatility of it.
Yeah, I love the New York loft apartment. It, you did it in the blacks and grays fabric.
Yes, that's our newest collection, and it has done incredibly well. I think because you get the beautiful faded florals, but in a kind of a more modern approach.
First of all, it looks so comfortable. When I saw that, I thought, oh my God, how wonderful to wake up in that bed.
It is. It's mm-hmm. rich. I mean, we just styled it with cabbages, cushions and fabrics and things, but it started like beautifully even before we arrived.
So let's talk about the book. The three of us had picked various projects that we particularly liked. One of the things I wanted to start with was your introduction of the book really sort of comes down quite strongly on the whole, you know, we're getting the back to basics movement, and because of the economy, and you haven't seen too many. But I haven't seen too many editorials or books that are really quite that blunt, and I thought it was I thought it was great. It was a very interesting, very, you know, open. This is what's going on in the world, and that fits with, you know, the collected over time. Don't just throw it out and buy new aesthetic.
The thing is, my first book that I wrote, called, it's out of print now, but I think I wrote it in about 2002. And my daughter, in fact, pointed it out to me. I had said in the introduction of that book that should the stock market collapse in a heap, at least one would have beautiful things in one's house in a very simple way, and we could learn to live in a simple way.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to write that in 2002.
Yeah.
I then did another book called The Cabbages and Roses Guide to Natural Housekeeping, and I was similarly blunt in that about how we are doing such damage to our world with the greed and the fact that we don't pay attention to what we're doing to it. And I'm astounded that governments aren't doing more to make us all live in a greener, more organic, healthier way. I'm just astounded. I say that in my book.
Well, I think that is one of the great things about this particular style. Again, the reuse of vintage and found objects, I mean, that is the best way, I think, to decorate. That's a small thing one can do, you know.
It's just a small thing, and there is enough out there to keep us all happy for a long time. And I'm not trying to put people who produce new things out of business. I'm just saying we just need to rethink.
Right.
We just need to rethink what we're doing to the world and how we're using up our resources. When we've all got so much as it is.
One of the parts of your book that really stood out to me was this treehouse. Well, there's a backyard with a swimming pool that it's Brook Cottage.
That's where I am now.
Oh, that's where you are. I love it. I love everything from the garden, which is a working garden, and you know it greets you with all this lavender and. Then there's a swimming pool that I love the swimming pool because it feels almost like a pond.
That's what we were aiming for, to make it not a pool, but more like a pond.
Mm-hmm.
Can I say that that's heated by our eco wood boiler, so it can be amazingly warm and it takes 3 logs to burn.
And then you have this treehouse. Is there an outdoor, an outside picture of the treehouse? Because there's a few indoor photographs, and there's a tree actually coming up through the...
It looks like a little cottage, actually.
Yeah.
This is so romantic. I just could cry that someone really lives like this. I mean, you really live like this. It's amazing.
Well, I have to admit, the treehouse, which is built on a slope, that's why the trees are growing through it. So you can see the front of it seems to be on the ground, but the back of it is literally standing on trees. And my husband built this for me to, actually he built it for the children, and then he extended it so it could be my studio. But I'm one of those people who can't work in a dedicated space. It makes me sound very ungrateful, completely devoid of ideas. And just, I need to be in the hub of things in order to work.
Mm-hmm. Is this space with the bergère sofa and the, is that in that same?
It's in the courtyard of our house.
I love that with all the layered different kinds of seagrass and then the carpet on top of that. That to me is an ideal space. I love that.
Now, is that tented ceiling up all the time or is that?
Yes, it wasn't meant to be. It's literally a tent made of canvas. And we put it up for my husband's 50th birthday 10 years ago. So beautiful, I couldn't bear to take it down.
Yeah.
So there's a roof on top of that. I see it now. I can see a little bit.
A big topic in the blogs in America, well, on my blog, is cluttered versus uncluttered. And people that love, you know, that cluttered look, then they see something that's pristine and white and has no, you know, no clutter. And then they want that. And then they see a picture and they go back and forth. You know, that's like me, you know, go back and forth between. Do you ever... do you ever question your aesthetic as wanting to clear out the clutter, or are you just...
Absolutely. I'm just like everybody else. You know, one minute I think, oh, I can't live without my books, my piles. I think, do you find that it happens in the winter you need clutter, in the summer you need nothing?
Right.
And I feel that one can move it about. In the winter, you do need to have all your things and bits around you because you haven't got the outside. In the summertime, I'd like to keep everything clear and clean and easy to keep because I want to be outside.
That's helpful to hear that someone that you created this lifestyle, but then you still question yourself. People always are, you know, it makes them feel insecure, you know, when they question, do they like the non-cluttered or do they like the cluttered? So it's helpful to see that is a normal. I always try to say it's normal to want you know, the other.
Human nature, you always want what you want, what you don't have. But the beauty of those two styles is they're both very easily achieved.
You have a house on Long Island on here that I feel has a very clean, Spartan maybe feel to it, but it is filled with things. But it, the, you know, everything from everything being painted white, it the palette is so serene that even though, you know, the slip covers are not very tailored, they're loose and they're, you know, they're wrinkly and that sort of thing, there is a feeling of, and everything's painted very clean and white, and even there's, you can even see the black, the soot coming up out of the fireplace. Something about that even adds to it. It's beautiful. You wouldn't even want that cleaned. There's something very beautiful and organic and alive
exactly
in the midst of all that white.
You can also see in this house that you can do both. You know, some of it is very plain and simple and bare. Yet, if you look at the pictures, there are actually piles of clutter all over the place. But without giving that feeling of
over. There's a great framed piece in the bedroom that has a sleigh bed on top of a chest of drawers, and it almost looks like paint samples that were put on paper and then collaged very loosely in a framed. It may not be that at all, but it's a really beautiful vignette, just a very serene, soothing vignette.
Yeah, I love the dining room with the. Y'all see the dining room?
Yeah. Galvanized.
A granny buffet piled high with dishes. And I love that. I love that.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the storage as well as art.
I was loving the Cape Cod house. And offline, I'm going to want you to tell me where it is so I can go stalk it since I could drive there. You know, it's just your quintessential shingle-style house. Amazingly, not that old, only 15 years old. But this must have been photographed in March or April as well.
Yes, indeed, they all were.
Yeah.
But I think that the American architecture is so way ahead of any other country. I love American architecture. And the fact that this is a relatively new house, but still with the great details and the beautiful architectural features. And Americans do windows so well.
We do like to look outside. I like how this house, it's interesting to note that the house doesn't have much in the way of window treatments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, it's all, of course, look like they have a beautiful view, so it's all about the view.
Exactly that. I mean, I don't think one should cut out the outside. But the windows are beautiful enough not to be hidden by
Did you do all your styling? I mean, these pictures, they're styled. I know we talked about it, but the in the book, the styling is just beautiful. Like the Cape Cod house, the dining room, again, Linda, don't you love that with the glasses and the ironstone? And
oh, yeah. I mean, it's beautiful. Just really beautiful and you know, certainly a lot of white and the open shelving, all that. And the ubiquitous New England Windsor chairs, I just like to point out.
There they are. You know, in 91, there's this tiny little thumbnail photograph of just an old bench, probably a cow milking bench that has this great, you know, blue-green and a red and white striped pillow on it, galvanized bucket underneath. Yeah, with a pair of tennis shoes. I love that. That little shot is just, to me, that is so Cape Cod.
Yeah. So simple, so beautiful.
Mm.
How did you find the houses?
Well, Amy Gibbons, who works in our office, she's in charge of homeware. She and I did a huge amount of research on the internet, and also through a great friend of mine called Sarah Callender, who used to work in America in PR. She has a wonderful address book, so a lot of these people came through her. So we were very lucky to be allowed to photograph these houses. All the English houses, I think, without exception, are all friends.
Okay, I want to talk about Hedham Court. I actually was going to do a whole blog story on this house. Tell us about, there's a really interesting story about this.
They are the most amazing couple. They're called Julian and Isabel Bannerman, and they are just extraordinary garden designers. They are completely and utterly brilliant. And they've worked for incredible clients, including Prince of Wales and the Rothschilds. I mean, just everybody. They've also, I'm not quite sure at what stage it's at, they won the competition to design the garden at Ground Zero.
Oh.
Right, right.
Which is something we ought to look up and see what's happening there. But they are, you know, they are old friends and live in this extraordinarily beautiful house. And happily now for everybody, their garden is open to the public during the summer. And if any of your listeners are in anywhere near Bristol or Bath during the summer months, I highly recommend going to see Hernham Court. Garden is unbelievably beautiful.
And
incredible.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a history of the actual building?
Well, it was, I'm going to have to read this, apparently built in the 11th century, so you can imagine. I mean, that's incredibly old. Mm. And it was a monastery. I mean, it's been added to over the years. It's got Tudor gables, it's got, and they've even got 19th century extensions. It's a mishmash of styles and dates, but it's, but somehow it all sits together beautifully.
It's an amazing structure.
Is it huge inside? Is it huge?
It's big, but they have three sons. It's not enormous, you don't trust in it. It's a perfect size for a family of six, whatever they are, five. It's a perfect size, actually. It's my ideal size house.
The paint color, there's this beautiful, just acidic orange, yellow, against a black. Are those original colors? Were those brought in?
No, those are brought in. It might be that when they found the house, it was already painted yellow, but having seen it, it's definitely new paint, but looks exquisite with all the black woodwork.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Bannermans have just got an incredible eye, both in gardens and in interiors.
There's a picture of your, I don't know what it is, but it's gray, and it's a dining room, and there's two, like, French chairs. Do you know that picture? It may even be in the book. Is that your house?
Yeah, I think you might have seen it on the website.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yes, that's my house.
Oh, I love that. In fact, I have that on my blog somewhere. I showed it one time. I love that. I love your house.
Yeah, I love that picture too. But this is how it happens. Because one moment the room looked like that. Now it's a very, very crowded room, full of sofas and desks and lamps and things. So it just goes to show, you know, I go from one extreme to another.
Oh, so that's not how it normally was.
You've made me yearn to go back to the simplicity of just the sofa.
Is there a picture of that in the book? Is that what you just said?
No, but there is on our website.
Okay.
But also in your house, your sitting room with, it looks like a gray wall or maybe a green-gray wall, and you have a quilt on the sofa, and I just love the checks, and it's so romantic.
I'm a very greedy person, and I kind of needed, I wanted to put all cabbages and roses fabrics in the same room, and they kind of were. Christina kind of were. All those fabrics are cabbages and roses.
I think that's one of the nice things about this particular look, is that it's not intimidating, and it's comfortable. It doesn't, you know, someone who can pull this together by simply putting together things that they like and, you know, using these very basic fabrics.
Exactly. And I always advocate people just choosing what they like.
Mm-hmm.
I do somehow think that in the end it all works. It always all works.
And there are a lot of fabrics I see, but in the pillows, there are a lot of different fabrics in your living room.
It's a good way of being able to change the look of a room by changing the pillows.
Was there anyone that inspired you when you were creating your line? Or
But I'm always inspired by Colfax and Fowler. I've got all the books that were published on their work. And I just think that they were so clever, so English, so chic in every way. And I have a feeling that that kind of over-the-top English design is going to be back quite soon. Well, I hope it is, because Cabbages are bringing out a new collection next year that is quite blousy florals and beautiful colours. So rather than the pared-down, rather monotones that we known for, we are going to do some lovely bright kind of over the top prints. But I think that works in America, just from memory, you know. American House and Garden always feature houses with beautiful full blown roses and wonderful colour.
So Christina, what you said you're launching a new line next year, and I think it's amazing you've done in 10 years of Cabbages and Roses 5 books. I think that's I'm beginning to wonder how you do it all.
I have to say that the book bit is the easiest bit.
Is it?
I love it. I love being asked. I love being asked to do books because it means I can be at home, and I have to work on the book. I can't be distracted by other things. But when I'm doing collections for either the clothes or for the fabrics, there's always a million distractions, and it seems to me that the actual designing has to be done in my spare time. Because there's so much to running a business that it's kind of a luxury to have the time to do my job. So writing books is kind of a good holiday. So roll on the next one.
You're already on the next one.
We're thinking about it.
Yes, you're still promoting this one. So
yeah. Well, you ought to do one for your new fabric line comes out.
Yep. Whole new story.
Yeah.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to having a new shop here in the States. And
where should we open it?
I think Sag Harbor is a good choice.
Houston would be a great choice.
Mm-hmm. One in LA, one in Houston, and one in Sag Harbor.
Yeah, I wish.
Christina, thank you so much for joining us. This is, you know, the book is beautiful, and it's been fun hearing the backstories and really being able to delve into the pictures. I'm sure our listeners are going to really, really appreciate the style. It's a very popular style here, and the best of luck with everything.
Thank you so much, all of you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
This has been the Skirted Roundtable with Joni Webb from Coat to Texas, Megan Arquette from Beach Bungalow 8, and I'm Linda Merrill from Surroundings. And this week we are joined by Christina Strutt of Cabbages and Roses. Thank you so much for joining us. You can visit us online at www.skirtedroundtable.blogspot.com or download our podcasts from iTunes. Search for the Skirted Roundtable. Thanks so much, and we'll be back soon.